You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Dennis Murray. 10 years ago, when I was the BBC's correspondent in Ireland, it became the first country in the world to ban smoking in the workplace. Since then, many other nations have passed legislation making it illegal to smoke in public buildings. But what impact have these restrictions had on the people affected? The Irish capital is where it all started.
This is Mulligan's Bar in central Dublin. It's one of the most famous pubs in the city, and I first came here as a student many years ago. But I also returned over the years as it was a great journalist's haunt. And in all those days, there was a fog. It was blue, it reeked, and it stuck to your clothes and hair. And there were times you couldn't actually see further than the end of the bar. Now, the talk may still well be animated, but without the reek. So a decade on, with the clarity of now being able to see the back wall, what's changed in the health of the nation? And why did the Irish, of all people, do it first? Micheál Martin was the health minister who brought in the ban.
To me, coming into health, start from first principles. What are the main killers in Ireland? Heart disease, cancer and accidents. To me, looking at the statistics in terms of tobacco, it was an absolutely no-brainer. And we just needed a cultural shift and a fundamental shift and attack tobacco, because tobacco was the big one. If you're a health minister and you don't pursue this agenda, you are failing your people.
And so on the 29th of March 2004, this happened.
In one of the few Dublin pubs open as the clock struck midnight, fears that the ban would not be enforceable appeared unfounded. Customers were good-humoured as staff immediately set about enforcing the ban.
Just one family has owned Mulligan's Bar for generations. Gary Cusack, the latest of the family, was worried the smoking ban might spell the end of the place. But it didn't happen.
I'm very pleased that it's in Irish. Actually, a lot of my personal friends who would be, at the time, I'd say nearly all of them were smokers, I'd say 90% have given up smoking. And they actually told me the one thing they hated when they're in a pub smoking was somebody to flash cigarettes, they'd take one. All right, but the ban came in, they waited until they really wanted to smoke, and then they went out, so they smoked a lot less. And then eventually they just said, well, I'm not doing this anymore, it's cold outside, and they gave them up. The big thing is, you don't smell it, you don't feel it, you know, it's not around you, so you don't be inclined to go out and have a smoke.
Having worked without the ban for so many years, what was it like the day the ban came in? It would have been a very weird experience.
It was strange, people coming in that they couldn't smoke, you know. It was, in the first few weeks, and there was one guy that was, he was totally anti-ban. He did eccentric and he came in with a cigarette and I had to put him out. He was the only person. You know, some people were grumbling about it, some people weren't happy about it. Still is a few people who bring it up, they go, oh, the smoke, man. But they've changed their ways. I find it much better in terms of there's no smoke in the area, because it used to burn your eyes and you'd feel on your chest and stuff like that, you know. So it's good.
Micheál Martin, who used to drop into Mulligan's himself, was astonished by the international media attention on the introduction of the ban, the first move in a global trend.
The notion they couldn't get a handle on was, how can this happen in the Irish pub? And so the New Zealand minister came over to me and she says, now that it has happened in the Irish pub, I'm telling my people, we can do it too. And that seemed to be the refrain, and I think the New York Times front page of it, I think I have the caption of it at home, it is the pub and the no-smoking ban. And I think that grabbed international attention, that the pub-loving Irish can do something like a smoking ban in their beloved pubs. So move on the rest of the world. Yeah.
What Ireland did at that time was something really quite radical. In the decades since, most other countries have brought in bans too. But the strength of the restrictions varies, and there are places where it hasn't happened. The debates often reflect the relationship between smoking and society. In Prague, the tram network is one of the few places where smoking is illegal. The Czech Republic has some of the most liberal smoking laws in the European Union. Bars and restaurants can choose whether to permit puffing. And that means the discussions felt quite quaint to me, like those in Irish pubs 10 years ago.
It's football night and the boys are out for a beer. And I must say, it's a bit of a minor time warp. It's smoky in here. and clearing the air wouldn't go down too well with the regulars. Joseph Buska, a journalist and PR consultant, is one of them.
What I'm for is tolerance and freedom of choice. I want to have bars and pubs where the owners smoke, the employees smoke, the guests smoke, and everybody can enjoy it. And I'm very much for having non-smoking places where people can go to avoid smoke. That's all I ask.
Menka Pipkova is a political activist, and she's only in this smoky bar to put her case.
Like, I can't really stand being in smoky places, so within like 5-10 minutes my eyes start hurting and I can't breathe properly. And also I'm quite conscious about, you know, what will happen to me in the future. I don't particularly enjoy breathing in like smoke and air that is not clean. And also, like, when I get home I have to have a shower immediately, wash all my clothes and do all these things. Or during the day, if I go to work and I have time off for lunch, I can't go to a pub because then I can't go back to work smelling of smoke. It's just not possible.
What is forcing you to go to a restaurant? I mean, I understand what's forcing you to go to a tram, to walk on the street, to go to an administration building, but there's nothing that, I mean, I'm not going to discos because I don't like disco music, and I'm not going hunting animals because I don't like murdering animals, you know, and but I understand that there are people that want to do it. I can avoid them, but why can't you avoid smoking places, especially in a time when there's many non-smoking establishments around?
That is true for Prague. Yes, I can avoid them, even though if you want to go out after 10 p.m. it's impossible to find a place where where smoking is not allowed. So, you know, that's one thing. And also, I'm a social person. I like to meet people. I like to go out, and I'm not allowed. Why should I have to sit at home just because you want to smoke in a pub? Like, that is just not fair.
Well, I believe that the freedom of choice is there. And what before was rudeness and intolerance towards non-smokers is suddenly becoming a witch hunt for smokers, for people who consume illegal drug.
I've got nothing against you smoking. That's your problem, even though I have to pay for my own taxes for treatment. However, I do mind when you smoke next to me, because that makes me sick.
Sure, I understand that. But why don't you fight against cars? Because cars are polluting the public space. And I have to walk there, I have to live there, I cannot avoid it. While you can very easily avoid a smoky bar or pub, and you can go elsewhere. This is the main difference from my perspective.
Et maintenant, bienvenue à Paris. And now, welcome to Paris and the Rue de Bussy, at the heart of the city's café culture, where the declining art of conversation lives on. In France, there is a smoking ban, and this seems more familiar. Non-smokers inside, smokers outside. France started putting restrictions on smoking as long ago as the mid-1970s, but it was completely banned in bars and restaurants only a few years ago. But those puffing away on the patio still want the right to have a drag.
There's a sort of pathology or psychosis around smoking. Nietzsche said you should live dangerously but intensely. That's what I'm doing, living dangerously but intensely. I've been a smoker for 40 years. My name's written on that stool, and now I have to go outside to smoke. I'm not happy.
But inside, they think the ban is just the thing.
I think we deserve to have a healthier air, and that's it. I think it's very nice, very good.
I'm for the ban inside public places like restaurants. I like it if it's respected and there is a space where smokers are free to go.
Those of us of a certain generation associate Paris with all those 1950s movies where the characters speak to each other through clouds of smoke, made even more visible by the slanting light provided by directors like Jean-Luc Godard. It's hard to associate the city, where I spent a fair bit of time as a student, with non-smoking. But isn't this so Paris, so French? The only place in the world with a Musée de Fumeurs, the Smokers' Museum. But it might not be what it seems.
Some people come here thinking it's going to be an apology of smoking tobacco. And if they read everything carefully, then they notice we don't put tobacco as something that you must smoke every day. They realize that tobacco is, first of all, a healing plant that should not be smoked every day.
That's Raphael Freund, one of the museum's owners.
and there can't be too many people who see tobacco as healing anything. But he's compiled hundreds of exhibits over the last 12 years.
So the start of the museum wants to show how tobacco was used at the beginning. So the name of this part of the exhibition is Tobacco, the Plant of the Gods.
I'm very struck here as well. You have a collection of old pipes. I mean, some of them are actually beautiful little artifacts, but I see Queen Victoria up there. What's that about?
Yeah, actually in the 19th century in France, people loved to have pipes with an effigy, with a figure of someone. And it was also a sign of having money. So of course, if there is a queen or a king on it, it gives it a bit more value.
And she's looking as disapproving as usual, I think.
She's not smiling, that's true.
Visitors come from all over the world, but with the smoking restrictions spreading, isn't running the Smokers Museum going against the grain?
I don't know. I think it was time for people to know what is behind the compulsive habit of smoking. So for me, it really goes with the ban of smoking into the public area, because maybe people need to know what's really with this plant, tobacco, which is a healing plant at the beginning. And like the Indian, they know how to smoke it and they don't use it every day. They know it's really for special occasion.
And so what is your attitude to the ban?
I don't feel it's a good idea to ban smoking from public area, like it would be a good idea to ban drinking alcohol or drinking caffeine. Because if we think about it, chocolate can be harmful, caffeine could be harmful, a lot of product can be harmful if we just use it all day long, all year long also. What people need is more education to enjoy their smoke, but enjoy it with respect for the others, which they haven't been doing for like 50 or 100 years. People were like just smoking and smoking and smoking. It was not really respectful, I think.
Anywhere else, the debate surrounds the rights and wrongs of smoking in the workplace. In Paris, perhaps like nowhere else, it also involves philosophy. Mathieu Long is the author of a book about what he calls l'état nonu, the nanny state.
I think that if people decide freely what they want to do, they'll find the best solution. Smoking is a difficult issue because it's one in which I seem to be a kind of Darth Vader, and all the other people who are against smoking appear to be from the realm of goodness. But the state is intervening in all aspects of our lives, what we eat, what we drink. Politicians are turning us into children. They're doing that because there's no money. Before, heads of state would distribute money, and that would be the way of getting people on board. Now, politicians are very unpopular, and the only way they can restore their positive aura is to become knights of goodness by tackling these issues. So they play on people's fears, and they're trying to protect us against ourselves, which is an idea I find completely absurd.
The outside view of France would be laissez-faire, free-thinking. How has it gone with that, or that French culture?
I'm glad you believe France has a strong tradition of freedom, but it's something the French are starting to forget. It's true that smoking in a restaurant is annoying. But for me, this poses a real problem. The law should not be used to ban annoyances. I might be annoyed by your shirt, but I don't want the law to regulate that, because it's a misuse of legislation.
The personal choice argument is without doubt the most common one against smoking bans. Now that has a particular resonance in the Czech Republic, where most smokers are dead set against following the trends in Western Europe.
We're in a pub. Alcohol and smoking go together. And if people don't like that, they should go to a place where they don't serve alcohol.
My opinion is that non-smokers shouldn't impinge on the rights of smokers, and the minority shouldn't impinge on the rights of the majority.
In Prague, I got the impression that people were particularly resistant to anything which seemed to curb liberties. After all, it's a country which went through decades of oppression, first the Nazis and then communism. In one smoky cafe, a musician who'd had a revolutionary role happened to drop in. He was the sax player in a band called the Plastic People of the Universe. Now, the prosecution of its members became a cause célèbre for anti-communist protesters. Bratislav Brabinets is a keen smoker. So?
What do you think of the possibility of a ban on smoking coming into bars
it's
like this?
Stupid. It's just stupid. If you are going to the bar, you expect to have a drink and cigarettes.
Would you regard it as, I'm probably putting this too hard, but a restriction on a freedom?
I guess it's a some infection which is going through the world. In the next generations, everything will be prohibited. Laugh, smoking, drinking, everything will be prohibited. We are surrounded by just some kind of stupidities.
Smoking as an act of revolution? Well, no, it didn't bring down communism. But it has a certain symbolism. Leos Hager, a former health minister, tried to bring in a ban, but failed, because the political will simply wasn't there. He thinks the new freedoms make it harder to tackle smoking.
Nowadays, kids are being treated more liberally. The notion is that they get more skills for their life. They can discuss more things, ask parents openly. But this is the drawback, that the kids do whatever they want more easily.
One of the difficulties you had when you were health minister is smoking was none of your business.
That's right. About 20 or 15 years ago, we put the responsibility of tobacco issue to the Ministry of Agriculture. And that's why now it's difficult to change it. And the tendencies to support the tobacco industry is stronger a little bit than in other countries.
Imagine, tobacco was the province of the men of ag. But doctors believe some laws have to be brought in. Dr. Eva Krolaikova runs an anti-smoking clinic at the city's largest teaching hospital.
We are not against smokers, we are against smoking, and smokers are our patients.
Okay, what are the effects of smoking on the population, as far as you know, in terms of deaths or preventable diseases?
We have about 16,000 deaths caused by smoking each year, which is about 1/6 of all deaths. And the majority are deaths from cancer, almost 5,000 caused by lung cancer. But more people than from lung cancer are dying because of cardiovascular diseases. Then about 2,000 die because of COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And the rest belongs to many other diseases.
Why is it that the Czech Republic is a smoking society? Is it fair to describe it as that?
Definitely, you're right. We have cheap cigarettes, and currently for your average income you can buy twice as many cigarette boxes compared to 20 years ago. We have still smoking restaurants, as you can probably see. And if we look on the research in countries where the legislation bans smoking in indoor spaces, including restaurants, there is a decrease, about 17%, in acute myocardial infarctions.
But has the ban had as positive an effect on the health of a nation as she suggests?
This is the largest cancer hospital in France, the Gustave Roussy Institute, and I'm here to meet the country's leading public health scientist, Catherine Hill. Is it possible to say the percentage of the population that smoked before the ban came in and now?
Hasn't changed.
I find that very surprising. I thought the numbers would have gone down.
There were studies, and in France, no signal were detected because the ban was so gradual, so we couldn't see the step. The lung cancer mortality has been going down among men and is going up very fast among women, but French women started smoking much more recently than women in the US or in the UK. And so we're just at the beginning of the epidemic.
That sounds a bit cataclysmic, but the so-called father of the smoking ban, former Irish Health Minister Micheál Martin, is emphatic that it makes a difference.
There's been some very good studies, the Brunel study, showing that about up to nearly 3,700 lives have been saved in Ireland.
3,700 lives in Ireland have been saved in 10 years.
University College Hospital in Cork, for example, said there was a dramatic decline in admissions of people with sudden heart attacks as a result of the smoking ban. There's been research done on workers in pubs, and they've all shown very significant improvements in respiratory health. And then the biggest impact of all is simply the quality of life that people now enjoy. A smoking ban in the workplace, which is what we introduced, was to protect the workers. So that was the first priority, that everyone's entitled to a healthy working place.
That's been the main argument in every country which has brought in a ban on smoking in the workplace. Yet in spite of what health professionals say, the tobacco industry is sticking robustly to its position that secondhand smoke has not been proven to be harmful. Axel Gietz is from Imperial Tobacco, the fourth largest tobacco firm in the world.
The secondhand smoke issue is controversial. The evidence based on the science of epidemiology shows that the results can be attributed to a number of factors. Bottom line, the scientific evidence is not there. However, we do acknowledge that tobacco smoke can be a nuisance for non-smokers. That said, we believe that ventilation, segregation of smokers and non-smokers, and mutual consideration will actually solve this issue. People are free to choose who they spend their time with. People are also free to choose, by the way, where they work. We do not believe that the science is in any way conclusive to justify smoking bans.
But our French expert, Catherine Hill, rejects that point.
This is the argument of tobacco company, and they've been advocating that. It's a freedom, it's a personal choice, etc. But it's killing millions of people, and it's really useless, basically. So, you know, they enjoy, they get addicted, they cannot stop.
Another lobby which opposed the ban very strongly in Ireland 10 years ago were the publicans. They predicted the ban would cost more than 1,000 jobs. So did that happen? Pádraig Cribben represents rural landlords.
We have lost 1,300 pubs, between 15 and 20% of the population of pubs in the country. We haven't lost 1,000 jobs in the meantime. We've lost somewhere between 10 and 15,000. Now, it would be wrong to put all of that down to the smoking ban, but it certainly has been a contributory factor.
The one thing that's associated with Ireland is the bar, the pub, and the crack therein, and the music and all that. Does that sadden you now, that that image may have been tarnished?
Oh, let's be clear. The pub is still there. The crack is still there, and it will be there. And I have no fear in that context for the future of the Irish pub. What I am saddened is that a number of people have lost their businesses and that between 10 and 15,000 people have lost their livelihoods.
Those are stark figures. But he says most publicans wouldn't want smoking back in their bars. Doctors say that governments must make the fight against smoking a priority over almost anything else. Catherine Hill thinks the case against tobacco is unanswerable.
It's a product that kills half of its regular consumers. There's nothing to say for it. It's just a bad habit. Half of the smokers want to quit. It's very addictive. And the tobacco company, they make an enormous amount of money.
Will there come a day when tobacco will be a thing of the past?
Oh, yes. I'm sure of that. Absolutely, yes.
And how long might that take?
Again, it's a question of political will and of the power of the companies and the lobbying and the effectiveness of that.
It's not if, it's when.
It's inevitable, yes, because it's just insane.
Dr. Hill says the tobacco giants are targeting populous countries in the Far East. But recently, China has announced plans to ban smoking in public places. Several European nations, such as Finland, are forecasting a future free of tobacco. Now, this would have been unthinkable a decade ago, and it was Ireland that led the way. Who would have believed it? So, does Micheál Martin foresee, one day, a smoke-free planet?
Well, I think you could, maybe not in our lifetime. You see, consumer demand will ultimately change industry and change manufacturing and what people manufacture and so on like that. I mean, in the emerging economies and in the Africa and Asia, that's a long way off. When the health statistics start crippling those countries, as they inevitably will because of tobacco addiction, that's inevitable in my view.
But unsurprisingly, the tobacco industry sees a different world. Axel Gietz from Imperial Tobacco.
I think the tobacco industry has a very good future ahead of it. I think that evidence from around the world shows that ever stricter regulation has not prevented a hardcore, as it were, of adults, let's put that number at 20-odd percent, from continuing to choose to smoke based on the information freely available about the health risk associated with it. We believe that adults should be free to make these kind of lifestyle choices, and we do not think that ambitious goals proclaimed, such as the ones you've just mentioned about a tobacco-free future for countries or society at large, take this simple fact of life into account. So bottom line, we are very bullish about the future of our industry, and any investor will tell you tobacco industry is a very, very good bet to take.
So outside Mulligan's Bar in Dublin, the smokers are still here. In almost 40 years as a journalist, apart from politics and conflict, I've not come across such passionate views as those I've heard in this journey. Inside the pub, the air's clean. But a tobacco-free world in the near future? Don't hold your breath.
I'm Dennis Murray. You've been listening to the documentary, Clearing the Air.